McGill Daily of the Daily.
I'm McGill Daily.
Hi, I'm calling from the McGill Daily. Can I ask you some questions?
This is a little bit diplomatic.
News.
Can you design? Could I see you for a second?
We're going to cap this.
News, can you dummy?
Did that story come in yet?
Editorial's in 5 minutes.
McGill Daily.
Unfit to print.
So hello, and welcome back to Unfit to Print. Happy New Year. My name is Erin Hudson, and I'll be co-hosting. I'm a news editor at The Daily.
And I'm Henry Gass. I'm also a news editor at The Daily. I'll be your other co-host.
So what we're going to do for this episode is a bit of a semester in review before this second semester begins. So we're going to start off with the story that I covered on the McTavish flood. This flood happened on September 9th. The water reservoir broke down for a reason we still don't know.
Yeah.
But we reported on it as it happened.
A lot of wild rumors flying around. But.
And yeah, so we're going to listen to a clip from Jim Nysel, who was the administrator who I interviewed for the story.
When the flood got released from the pump house up over the top, it roared down the back of McTavish or Penfield, then down McTavish Street. On its way, it was ripping up some of the asphalt on the public roadways, and then coming down our own street itself. We thought there would be extensive damage given the sheer volume of the flow, but we were shocked. I think, surprisingly, we weathered this really well. It was, in a way, surreal, because even talking to one of the people I was working with over the course of the whole emergency last night, as we're leaving, right, it was roughly 11 o'clock, we're strolling down the street, we're looking around and said, we don't see evidence of what happened. It was amazing how evident it was, as you've probably seen in some of the videos, and now you look back and say, where'd it go? The street's dry, so there's a little bit of sediments here and there, but the evidence of the infiltration of the whole event is quite minimal.
So that was Jim Nysel, the vice...
The vice principal services.
So that was Jim Nysel, yeah. Speaking about the McTavish flood that happened the start of the year, September.
And now we're going to move on to perhaps the biggest story of the semester, which is the MUNACTA strike, as well as there are a lot of other labor issues going on last semester at McGill. And we're fortunate enough to have Michael Lee Murphy, who was our labor reporter all semester, who did a couple interviews with some of the labor representatives on campus about the MUNACTA strike and all the other negotiations that have been going on campus. So now we'll go to Mike's interviews.
With regards to labor relations at McGill, the semester has been a bitter one, with non-academic staff walking the picket line and the administration going to the courts to push them further and further from the campus. AgSEM, the union representing teaching assistants, has gone on strike 3 times before, most recently in 2008 when TA struck for higher wages, among other demands. The 2008 strike fell during the spring exam period and delayed the release of grades into the summer. The administration fired TAs from their other positions at the university. So on Thursday, November 24th, McGill's unionized teaching assistants met in a general assembly to vote on McGill's second offer after 9 months of negotiations. The TAs gathered in Leacock to hear the results.
Voting for the recommendation of the executive were 97 people, which represents 77.6% of those who voted. Voting against were 26, representing 20.8% of those who voted, and there were 2 spoiled ballots. So thank you all again for the process.
Before we leave, the chair of the marketing committee. So I'd like to thank you for coming out to the meeting. I'd like to have a motion to adjourn this meeting today. Mona from Urban Planning, seconded by, yes?
Cheryl
from Chemistry. Okay, thank you very much.
Lorona Lewis, president of the union.
Now, there are 26 votes against. Someone outside was telling me that they were upset about the fact that the pay increase comes in the form of recognition of statutory holidays, not a pure pay increase, you might call it. I mean, how would the leadership respond to that?
I think the leadership would respond that it was a ploy from the employer to present it in that way so that it doesn't appear that it is actually 3% increase in pay, simply to justify that they don't have any money, when our analysis shows clearly that there is money to pay the people who work at McGill, and McGill has chosen not to pay so far. So basically, the bottom line is that there is an increase. That's the bottom line. It's presenting, the way you present your arguments or you frame it, the university can do it to suit, you know, their agenda, but we know that there was an increase.
What concrete impact do you think this will have on negotiations for invigilators and course lecturers going forward?
Well, we know that there is money. So obviously we're not going into this agreement buying any other negotiation with McGill, buying the argument that there is a deficit and there is no money. We know that there is money, and we know that they can afford to pay us for what we're asking. So that is how it impacts on our negotiations. What we're asking for is very reasonable for invigilators, and the course lecturers are continuing their discussions. I'm not a course lecturer. I'm not part of the unit, so I don't have the liberty to talk about their demands. But in terms of invigilation, clearly, the number of people employed and the money that we are asking for is very small compared to the overall surplus that McGill has.
The nearly three-month-long Munaka strike was clearly on the minds of many in the room. The strike had gotten increasingly acrimonious, as picketers were accused of threatening administration staff and even arrested on picket lines. We just heard the results of the vote. Are you happy about the outcome?
I'm very happy about this outcome. The reason I came out today, normally I'm fairly apathetic about student politics and that sort of thing, but the overall mood in my department is that people are happy with their TA-ships and happy with the conditions they're under, and there just really isn't that much of an appetite for a strike at the moment. Because seeing how well the negotiations between Munaka and McGill are going, it doesn't appear that the university is giving much ground. The fact that they're giving any ground in terms of these wage increases, and the fact that they're even acknowledging the importance of TAs, even if it's some very loose language in a statement, it's encouraging, and I don't really see what a strike would do in terms of changing any of what McGill brings to the offering table. So I'm happy with the outcome.
My name is Mona Luxon. I'm from the School of Urban Planning.
Well, we've just heard the results. How do you feel about how the voting went down tonight?
I'm glad people were out to vote. I think that was really important. I personally was in favor of a strike, or at least pushing a little bit harder on the McGill administration, so I'm disappointed to see that people sort of accepted the first offer that was given. But I do think that it's encouraging to see that TAs are actually out and participating in the democratic process, and I think that's really important. And hopefully as this process goes forward over the next few years and the next rounds of negotiation, we'll see more TAs coming out and exercising their power as union members to really define the terms of debate.
Now, you're wearing a Munaka pin. Someone I was speaking to earlier was saying that judging by the way that the Munaka strike has been handled by the university, they didn't have much appetite for an AgSim strike this winter. How would you respond to that?
Interesting, because my appetite for a strike, so to speak, really comes from the way that the university has treated the Munaka strike. And I feel that given the terms of the collective agreement that the university has proposed, I don't have any faith that they'll follow through in actually supporting an adequate number of TA hours. And so my vote for a strike, or at least to reject the collective agreement, was really based on the fact that the McGill administration has not proven themselves trustworthy in terms of safeguarding the interests of workers and the interests of students, which is really what we're about here.
Invigilators, the people who administer exams, are also unionized through AgSim and have been negotiating their first contract since last March. They are seeking a raise that would bring the hourly rate of pay up to $15.25 from $10 an hour. The union says that the provincial average for invigilators is around $15.74 an hour. Last week, after months of stalled negotiations, AgSim executives asked members to vote on pressure tactics, including a possible strike. The vote was scheduled for tonight, Tuesday the 6th. Yesterday morning, however, McGill agreed to go into provincially supervised arbitration, which the union is claiming as a victory. Invigilators and teaching assistants are just two of the six employee groups across various unions that have been at the negotiating table this year at McGill.
And that was Michael E. Murphy talking to various bargaining units on campus who were involved in negotiations with the administration last semester.
And so another thing that was happening this fall semester was the Occupy movement. And this isn't necessarily related completely to McGill, but Occupy Montreal began on October 15th. And so the McGill Daily news team, trying to get ahead, we pitched a tent and stayed on the Sunday night, the first Sunday night of the occupation. So we thought we were pretty intense. We live tweeted for the first time all semester, I think. And
it rained, I think.
Yeah. But anyway, Occupy Montreal ended on November 25th, so a little bit over a month from when it began. And Le Daily editor Anthony Lacassois reported from the morning of. So we'll go to his report now.
We're doing really good. The city's coming this morning. They're sending in a bunch of workers. They actually have a bunch of workers put on to literally come by and help us clean up. They're going to be coming in and taking a lot of the excess garbage of the people that have abandoned the place and left and gotten ready to go. And, you know, they don't want this park to be destroyed like we don't. We're leaving. We're taking all the ropes out of the trees. We're cleaning this whole place up. And they're allowing us to walk out of here with our held high, a song on our lips and joy in our heart. But we're leaving this place on good terms. We're actually going to be here Friday night. We're taking down a bunch of tents. They've given us the proper amount of time. We're being able to do this right on both sides.
So you're clearing the place, and then they're cleaning, and then you're coming back
here.
So you're coming back on Friday.
No, we're coming back. We're not leaving yet. Mm-hmm. They're allowing us to have our nights, our moments. We have our march. Come on down Saturday, 1 o'clock. We have a beautiful protest that's going to be happening and taking place. And we're literally being able to walk out of this place. We're taking down our tents. We're erecting some art. It's going to be a beautiful thing. Come on down and join us. It's going to be a wonderful day.
Okay, so you're not setting back the tents afterwards, are you?
Here?
Are you setting back the tents again once here? It's cleared?
What time of year, when, and why?
What do you mean?
I guess you'll see more later.
Okay.
We're going on to bigger, better, and more beautiful things. This whole thing is not over. It's not done, and it's not dead.
How are the negotiations with the police?
Sometimes tense, sometimes funny. Okay. But all in all, not a problem. There has been some rumors. There has been some dispelled beliefs. There has been people that have put one word out of context and made the whole thing like a doomsday scenario. When Tremblay was coming down with a piece of paper, it was the fact that he wanted to hand us our eviction. It wasn't he was going to. He didn't give us our eviction. We still have not gotten our 48-hour notice. Fact.
Do you think they will hand it to you anytime, or what is your feeling of their behavior in terms of the negotiations and everything?
Again, they don't want to come in. We don't want them to come in. We're walking out of here with our head held high and a song on our lips. Okay. What do I need to say more?
Ah, vous m'aidez à l'ambiance, viens. Ah, il s'est fait un combien de police pour défaire une tente.
Ça départ, attention. Par au feu.
Toutes les tentes sont recyclables. Toutes les tentes sont recyclables.
Merci. Salut, oui, bonjour. So that was Anthony Lacassois, the campus editor for Le Daily, who, by the way, we've been working with really closely all semester. They've been so great. We're really glad that rapprochement is going on.
Yeah, for all the Anglophones who, like me,
there's hope.
Have trouble, yeah. So now we're going to move on to a big student issue of last semester, which was the end of the years-long MOA negotiations for the SMU, Undergrad Student Society, on November 3rd, the Samui Legislative Council voted to sign a new memorandum agreement with the university. In doing so, forced 132 student clubs to take the word McGill out of their name or just change their names. The vote was 14-4, 5 against with 4 abstentions. There was a very heated open council debate before they went into confidential session for the final vote. And they were in there for about 5 hours. They went past midnight. And so now 132 clubs have to change their names because of university concerns over liability and various other things. So we're about to hear an interview with SMU President Maggie Knight a few days after the vote about the negotiations and her thoughts on the whole years-long process.
Obviously, it's been a long period of negotiations, but we did get to a place where we felt that we had achieved the best thing we could without a dramatic shift from somebody. And so we brought what we had managed to get to council for debate and potential adoption. McGill students have made it very clear that they find McGill's stance on this issue to be hurtful and upsetting. McGill makes it very clear when you're negotiating with them that they ultimately hold all the cards. They ultimately own the name. They ultimately have much more power than we do just as on an organizational level. Ultimately, it seems, and maybe this isn't fair, but it seems to us that McGill wants all of the benefits of student groups' actions and none of the liability, which, you know, for us is just not, that becomes not about the McGill name as much as about policing what our student groups do. And of course, for us, that's very concerning. We negotiate with legal services. McGill sees this issue as primarily legal, whereas we see this issue as primarily one of student life. And those two things do not intersect successfully. I think we really did all that we could, given the circumstances we were in. And, you know, I was a clubs and services counselor before I was elected president, and this is something that's very near and dear to my heart, and it's been a very long and frustrating and sad process to be part of. You know, this is not a result that I am proud to present to students. Absolutely, it's not over. You know, we've agreed to sign, but that doesn't mean the work stops here. You know, now we are, you know, committed to supporting all of our student groups that have to change the name in doing so in a way that doesn't hugely negatively impact them. So I think throughout this process, we've gained a very complex understanding of McGill's stance on this issue. And certainly, you know, we think other associations, other student associations on campus deserve to benefit from that knowledge. So we'll of course, be able to give them advice and insight as needed. I mean, ultimately, right, we'd love to see McGill sort of come to its senses, have a realization that it loves its students and wants them to be associated with the McGill name, regardless of any disclaimer that they're students. I don't think that's likely to happen.
So that was SMU President Maggie Knight talking to the Daily about the SMU signing the new memorandum of agreement with the university and changing the names of 132 student clubs.
And then that brings us to November 10th, the night of November 10th.
Events of November 10th.
Exactly. Now famous. And so this next piece is actually recordings that I took. And this was because November 10th, I mean, now that it has this connotation of being the night where tear gas and pepper spray were used by riot police on students on campus. But at first, November 10th seemed like it was just going to be a very large tuition protest. And so
It was that too.
And this is what this audio clip really represents, because I had kind of set out to do this really great radio documentary about tuition. And then it never really happened because it got eclipsed entirely. Yes. So this is a little bit of it. A few things about it is that at one point you're going to hear the police had not been fully informed or they hadn't really gotten it together, and they arrived late. As the McGill contingent was walking down the McGill College Street, and then it kind of goes from there.
Let me just start with the chant here. Education is a right. We will not give up the fight.
Education is a right. We will not give up the fight. Education is a right. We will not give up the fight. Education is a right. We will not give up the fight.
So we are hundreds of students right here at the Riot Gates. We're about to join hundreds of UNACA members. We're about to join tens of thousands of students. hundreds of thousands of students on strike across the province.
So, solidarité! So, solidarité!
So, as you may know, last Tuesday night, the Arts Undergraduate Society General Assembly voted a strike, thus joining hundreds of thousands of other students who voted a strike.
Strike!
So we're here today to protest, not just against the $1,625 increase, which was announced by the Quebec government and which is going to push more and more people into debt, but we're also here for the people who can be here, for the people who already can't come to university because it's too expensive, or because they're from a poor background, or because they couldn't for any reason. We're here for a public education system, one that's accessible to everybody regardless of their means. We're here for public services. We're here for the future of everyone who's young, who's old, who's about to be born in this province. And we're going to join a lot of other people who are of a like mind with us.
Munaka! 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 Munaka!
Sidewalk, we're gonna escort you guys. Move over to the sidewalk.
Were the police informed that this would be happening today?
Yeah, the police were informed. I'm supposing they're just not very organized today. We'd informed them that we'd be taking McGill College all the way down to St. Catherine, but they don't seem to have been told in advance.
Concordia?
Yeah.
And what is your role in today's demonstration?
I'm basically keeping an eye on the situation and making sure that everyone's safe. I have all the connections with the people who, if there ever is a problem, heaven forbid, I know who to contact to make sure that we can deal with the situation as safely and as quickly as possible.
So is there first aid?
There is first aid, yeah. We have a team of about 10 first aid individuals. They're all certified. They're surrounding the pack right now. They're coordinating with us as well. So they have bodies to help them move into the crowd if there ever is a need for first aid in the crowd.
I'm super satisfied with the turnout. I think we have over 1,000 Concordia students out on this march today. It's really exciting. I think it's historic. Occupy Montreal is joining us. We have our part-time faculty association with us. We have some of our steel workers with us. Really, everybody came together today.
Did you hear about this protest at Occupy? Like, you guys had planned to be here today?
Yeah. It was planned like weeks ago. Because we're all students. We all have been students. We have family, friends that are students. I'm a student, so
already a student for Cégep du Vieux-Montréal.
Est-ce que vous êtes un étudiant par Chicoutimi?
Oui, je suis au Cégep de Chicoutimi.
Et vous avez voyagé ici?
Oui, on est parti à 8 heures ce matin, puis on vient d'arriver.
Et est-ce que vous voulez retourner ce soir?
Oui, on part à 4h30, 5h.
Et combien d'étudiants avec vous?
On était une soixantaine.
Et pourquoi est-ce que vous avez senti que c'est tellement important d'être ici?
Bien, il faut témoigner notre opinion, puis c'est un gros événement, fait qu'on voulait être là pour ça, puis pour démontrer qu'on était contre Charest, puis il faut démontrer que même si on est dans une petite ville, on est capable de sortir pour se battre pour nos opinions.
Is this the Munaka band?
Yes, it is.
What is their name again?
The World Class Band. You want to speak to
a
few members?
Yeah, I'd love to. Have you been playing along the whole march?
Yes. Yeah, we were marching directly from McGill College in Sherbrooke. And this is, I think, the third march that I've been in. And it's a gas. It's a riot, you know. And we're enjoying it, even though the inclement weather is here. But we're here because we have to be here. Sorry.
Are there a lot of Munaka members here today?
Yeah, we have a couple of, a couple of hundred here today?
Or more than that.
More than a thousand. Yeah. We rounded everybody up with the students too. And we're showing our support. And people are showing their support for us. And Munaka strike that we're on now. So here we are.
I'm at Dawson.
Champlain.
Are you Sejep a student as well?
Yeah. He goes to Dawson, but we go to Champlain. So we just heard that Dawson closed out at 10.
Are you on strike today?
Yes, I am.
Did everybody walk out? Or what?
If you tried to get into school, people were blocking the entrances, so you couldn't really get in.
Did people try and go in?
Yeah, some people tried, but then administration was just like, all right, we'll cancel all classes today. So foul classes got canceled.
What do you think of the turnout today?
It's awesome. I think it goes over what we were waiting for. There are thousands of students, about 20,000 right now, students from all around Quebec. I think that it's a clear message for the PM, and I hope he's going to hear us, because for sure we are more than him.
And how many Cégep students are here?
It's about half of Cégep students were on strike today. I don't know how many Cégep students are here right now, but of course there are thousands of Cégep students. We are here because increasing tuition fees, it's not possible for many middle class and low income families. It's going to reduce post-secondary education accessibility. The PM says the loans and bursaries program is going to be bonified, but it's a lie. When you're doing a gross revenue of $60,000, you have access to $0 of Quebec's bursaries program. Right now, 80% of university students have access to $0 of bursaries. So when you increase tuition fees, it means that you're going to have less students on university bench. We launched an economic note a few days ago, which demonstrate that when Quebec students going through high tuition fees, we could lose on a five-year range from about 4,000 to 9,000 students, and that represents hundreds of millions of dollars in taxes that are going to be lost. And I think that we can't afford as a collectivity to lose one student.
Ici aux attaques, c'est une faible angle. Mais t'en fous à 203, puis tramway seul. Les policiers aux attaques, c'est une faible angle. Mais t'en fous à 203, puis tramway seul. Les policiers aux attaques, c'est une faible angle. Mais t'en fous à 203, puis tramway seul.
On veut étudier, on veut pas travailler.
On veut étudier, on veut pas travailler. On veut étudier, on veut pas travailler. On veut étudier, on veut pas travailler. On veut
No justice, no peace, fuck the police. Le police.
Pas de pigeon quand t'es dégueu.
realization of the manifestation gone?
Well, it was a long process to get an agreement between the four organizations that are united today, but we did it, and now we have a common front against the Sharia government.
And what about the safety measures? How has that been going today?
Well, we have a little security staff that is only there to be sure that everything goes well, and we have no problem since now, so I hope it's going to be the same till the end of the protest.
Okay.
Joel, what's going on?
There's currently an occupation, a peaceful occupation of the James Administration Building, so people are heading towards that.
So that was my long piece on November 10th and the tuition protest leading up to the occupation and the student demonstration that then occurred outside the James Administration Building, where the riot police and students clashed. Just at the very end, you heard Joelle Pudneau, the VP External for SMU, confirming to the Daily that there had been an occupation that was beginning in the James Administration Building. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. so obviously this, if you weren't there, it was a very traumatic night for anyone who was there.
Henry got pepper sprayed, among a few others.
Lots of people did. And people very emotional afterwards. And there was a spontaneous Facebook event started that night by a McGill student, Alex McKenzie. Within 24 hours, several thousand people were attending, and then by Sunday night, the end of the weekend, there were tens of thousands of people attending on Facebook, and it was scheduled for the next Monday. So on Monday afternoon, there was this forum organized in the James Square where the demonstration had taken place on November 10th and where all the students were pepper sprayed, and roughly 1,000 students, faculty, and some administrators as well attended in the James Square in front of the James Administration Building, and people spoke about their experiences. So now we're going to hear some short excerpts from that day.
So I'm really honored to have been asked to give this opening address. I'm going to give an account of what happened based on what was reported in the campus media as well as emailed out previously by the SMU, talking about why we're here, and suggest potential directions, offering two potentialities of where we can go as a campus after this. So for those of you who don't know, on Thursday, 20,000 students marched from Barrière UQAM Station to Rue McGill College. It was the single largest student day of action that this province has ever seen, with 200,000 students attending. Altogether peaceful, it went really, really well. By 4 o'clock, the demonstration finished and word circulated that we got a peaceful occupation of the fifth floor of the James Administration Building. A bunch of us heard this and kind of moved on to campus and have to try and support those who were there and find out what happened. We soon learned that security services inside had reacted violently, and accordingly, anxiety outside grew, the crowd grew, and came to include not just students but faculty and staff who supported what was happening. We were pushed off campus, effectively brutalized, and for a lot of people here, this is a moment of great anxiety, intentionally their first time that they've returned to campus since it happened on Thursday. What happened? We were pushed through the Milton gates and then I guess charged upon. It's a pretty stirring experience. But after the fact, students organized and came together. They weren't silent, but decided they were going to take action against what happened and immediately scheduled this event. I think it's a point of great strength that we need to rally upon. The intention of this afternoon is to create time and space for people to express and articulate what they experienced, because this is a community issue and we need to work through this as a whole. We're not individuals here, but this is something that the wider McGill community has experienced and that we can build on together. What I find most moving is the way that people weren't silenced but have come together now to talk about this, because we're going to try and contextualize this. Students and faculty are going to talk about how this isn't just an isolated incident, but part of a much wider context and series of changes that have happened at this university over the last couple of years. That our university has changed from an educational institution that values the livelihoods of its students, faculty, and staff towards a very corporate-minded body that prioritizes rankings above all else at the expense of student life, the expense of accessible education, the expense of job security, and at the expense of even academic freedom. We're going to try and talk about how this isn't just an isolated incident, isolated to Miguel, but part of a much wider series of reactions that students across the world have been taking against this in light of austerity measures.
So that was student Tyler Lawson, who started the address for the We Are All McGill Community Forum that took place on the Monday following November 10th. And now we're going to go to some audio from the principal, Heather Monroe Bloom. And this audio was taken on November 14th, the same day as the We Are All McGill Forum, a few hours beforehand. And she actually attended this forum as well.
This was in an interview with members of the Daily, the Daily, and the McGill Tribune in a collective interview.
And so I was the one representing the Daily at this interview. And basically this was where it was our first opportunity to ask Monroe Bloom questions relating to the Jutras report. Dean of Law, Daniel Jutras, was commissioned by the principal to report on the events of November 10th to do a fact-finding mission. And that report was, in fact, just released at the end of, during exam period on December 15th. Which you can check out that story.
Thursday was an unusual day. We had somewhere between 15,000 and 30,000 students at the edge of our campus demonstrating, and we happened to be situated right across from the Premier's office. And so, of course, I want to understand what happened, but it was not a usual day. It also would seem to be that things moved very, very fast and changed very quickly. It's an internal investigation. It's an investigation of what happened on our campus and in our processes. And it is not clearly, it's not there to stand instead of any normal processes, disciplinary, legal, or otherwise. So if there are complaints that people have, those complaints can still be filed. If there are disciplinary measures that people feel should be taken, those can still be implemented. But my reason for moving quickly to appoint Professor Jutras investigator and to have a December 15th deadline, it's a pretty intense, say, for him, 1 month turnaround, is I want to get the facts understood as best as we can. My interest as principal is that we learn from what happened to do the best that we can to not have that happen again. In a university, we do a lot of things that depend on internal judgments. The whole peer review system is us, judging ourselves as a community. We have a very self-governed approach to our operations. And so choosing someone of the highest distinction whose integrity is so well regarded, who has training to look at facts and make judgments, and who was willing to undertake to do this. He was the first person I thought of to do it, who's would be able to conduct it. So those are the reasons. He's got complete autonomy. He doesn't report to me in the course of doing this investigation. The report will be released with findings and recommendations, and I have confidence that he'll serve the university. Not any one individual, not any one special interest group, but he will serve the university. That's the purpose of the investigation. He will have every freedom to call on whomever he wants to see whatever records or other things he wants. There's nothing that Professor Jutra will learn that will identify any one individual. Mm-hmm. But that's different than talking about the security, talking about students, talking about people who weren't part of the university community, talking about the communication that happened with the police. So all of that will happen. But I actually felt it was very important that those who want to go talk and say what happened have immunity. Immunity with respect to what they tell Professor Jutra and what evidence they present to him. Say you wanted to file a legal charge or you wanted to file a disciplinary complaint, you take your same evidence to, or a complaint even, to someone else at the same time. This doesn't say everything else stops while this happens. But I deliberately wanted to give immunity to those who are making representation because I actually want to know what happened.
And so that was the interview with McGill Principal Heather Monroe Bloom about the Jutro report and the events of November 10th. And that's going to wrap it up for a special extra-long semester in review episode of Unfit to Print.
With two hosts.
With two hosts. Twice the content, twice the hosting.
Twice the fun.
Yeah, that's all we got. Strike's over now. Occupy's over now. We'll see what happens. I think there are more negotiations starting up as well with union, which hopefully Mike will be able to cover. So that's it for us. We'll be back in 2 weeks, same time, same place. Thanks very much to CKUT for having us today and the whole semester.
And thanks to everybody who contributed content. Mike, Anthony, Tyler Lawson, who spoke.
Jim Nysel.
Maggie Knight.
Getting anyone?
I don't think so.
Heather Monroe Bloom. It's been a good semester, and hope you all had a great break, got some sleep. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Thanks very much. Goodbye.